Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Hulin Daf Lamed Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Lamed Gimel, 6 lines from the top, the Gemara makes reference to a point that was mentioned in our previous shiur on Daf Lamed Beis, and that was Reish Lakish's observation that if the trachea is slaughtered, is shechted, before you get to the veshet, a hole was made in the lung. Once again, first trachea, and then before getting to the veshet, a hole is made in the lung. A hole in the lung, in general, creates trephus. In this case, though, the hole was made after the kona was shechted. Reish Lakish said that the animal is kosher. And the reason for that is that once the trachea is shechted, and the lung is simply an extension of the trachea, the lung is viewed at that point, after the kona is shechted, as if it's out of the animal, so that a hole made in it has no effect on the status of the animal. So, the main point for our current discussion is, the rea was viewed as if it's out of the animal. The topic heading that we have assigned to this Gemara is, Hayim Akum, Yochol Lechol Rea Mishchitas Yisrael. Can a Gentile eat lungs that are from a Jewish slaughtering, where a Jew slaughters an animal in anticipation of eating it? Can a goy partake of the rea? You'll ask, well, why not? The issue is that goyim do not have halachas of shechita, but they do have halachas prohibitions, like Jews do as well, of evrim and achai, eating limbs, organs from that are ripped off of a living animal. The question is, the term living, what are its parameters? So when it comes to shechita, we say that once shechita is done, mida oraisa, there is no longer an iser of evrim and achai. As far as a Gentile is concerned that does not have the dinim of shechita, the iser of evrim and achai ceases to pertain at the point that the animal's life breath leaves, or we can say as at the point that it dies. That is a different state, a different point in time than the completion of shechita. It's very simple to see that, because after shechita, the animal continues to twitch. And that twitching, as far as we are concerned, as far as the halach is concerned, constitutes life vis-a-vis the Gentile. So that when we look at the lung as if it's been removed from the animal prior to the completion of the animal's death, there is room to say that there is an iser of evrim min achai on that limb. Now, turning to the Gemara. Omar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Shema Mino Mida Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish. Once again, we are starting from 6 lines from the top where Rav Acha's name is underlined, and he says we can conclude from Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish. He is the one that said that once the kona is cut, is shechted, the rea is as if it's in a basket. We conclude from that, Mezamnin Yisrael al b'nei me'ayim ve'ein Mezamnin oivdei kechovim al b'nei me'ayim. In our sugya, in this discussion, b'nei me'ayim is a reference to inner organs. As opposed to limbs of meat, this is, we'll call it organ meat. And amongst the organs happens to be the lungs. So that we are saying that a Jew can partake of B'nei Me'ayim, which includes the Re'ah. A Gentile cannot. My Taima. Why the distinction? Answer. Yisrael de B'shchita Talya Milsa. With regard to Jews and their eating of meat, the allowance is dependent upon Shchita, the accomplishment of Shchita. Since we are talking about a proper shechita that is done in this case, we're going to be shechting here the kona and the veshet. A proper shechita is accomplished, so you can partake of the limbs, the organs. With regard to Gentiles, nechira is simply the killing, the stabbing, if you will, of the animal without any particular shechita stringencies. Just see to it that the animal is killed, and its death is the determining factor. That's uvamisa talya milsa. The ability of the goy, of the Gentile, to eat of the meat is dependent on the animal's death. Well, Hani, the Re'ah, which is part of the B'nei Me'ayim, Ke'ever Menachai Domu. It's like an Ever Menachai. After all, we said it's considered out of the animal at the point that the Kona alone is Shechted. Now, at that point, the animal is not considered dead. So you have a limb, an organ, removed before death. And as far as a Gentile is concerned, that would establish the limb as being Ever Menachai, a limb removed from a living animal. Omar Rav Papa. We have a Rav Papa comment that lasts a few lines, hence we've assigned a long marking to it. As you can see, Rav Papa's name is written to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara and encircled with a vertical descending dashed line, indicating these lines are Rav Papa's statement. Rav Papa tells us, Hava Yasivno Kameid Rav Acha Bar Yankiv, I was seated in his presence. Now, Rav Acha Bar Yankiv was the Rav that just finished presenting this analysis. Rav Papa was seated there, and he tells us, Uboy de Emole, and I wanted to say the following. Mi iko midi, d'Israel shoyo viko chove mosir. Is there anything that is allowed, in other words, that there is a leniency with regard to Jews, and when it comes to Gentiles, there is a stringency? And Rav Pope was bothered then. How can it be that for a Jew something would be allowed and that same item forbidden to a Gentile? Veloi amri lei, and I didn't say it. I didn't raise this objection. De amino, because I figured ha taimo ka'omar. Rav Acha offered a reason for it. Basically, the result of this is that there isn't any greater stringency per se vis-a-vis the goy over the Jew. Both have the same prohibition of Eber Menachai. It's just that the standard that determines at what point something ceases to be Eber Menachai is different. But as far as the basic halacha is concerned, they are on the same level, both being prohibited in Eber Menachai. When you see a difference in details, that is not sufficient to warrant the raising of this objection that Rav Papa had thought to raise. However, Tanya Dolok Rav Acha Bar Yankiv, we are going to see a Tanaic source in which the halacha presented is not in accordance with Rav Acha's conclusion. Haroitza lechol mi behemo kodim shetetzi nafsha. If a person wants to eat from an animal, eat meat that's taken from an animal before its life breath departs. Chotech kezayas boser mi beis hashchita. He would cut up, let's say, a hunk of meat from the neck area of the animal. Meat from the neck doesn't need any skinning. It's apparently easily removed without having to spend time skinning it. Umolcho yofe yofe, and you shall salt it very well to remove the blood. Umadicho yofe yofe, and rinse it off very well from the salt that absorbed the blood. Blood is forbidden for us to consume. Now, this meat, this chote kezayis boser from Beis HaShita, is essentially as soon as you finish cutting the two organs, the two neck organs, trachea and esophagus, the animal is still twitching. At that point, you're cutting out this kezayis boser, and that's an illustration of eating meat taken from an animal before yitzias nafsha. And now, as far as the actual eating of the meat, we tell you, umamtin lo ad shetetze nafsha, now wait before eating it until the life breath departs, until it stops twitching. Echad oved kechovim ve'echad Yisrael mutorin bo. And now we've dashed underline oved kechovim. We're saying that Jew and Gentile alike are able to eat from this. Now, what do we see here then? We see meat removed from an animal before its life breath departed, and the Gentile essentially is going to be able to partake of that. That is not in accordance with what Rav Acha said. He had said that things removed from an animal before the life breath departs would be usur for a Gentile. Messiah Leila Rav Idi Bar Ovin. This supports Rav Idi Bar Ovin, the Amar Rav Idi Bar Ovin, Amar Rav Yitzchok Bar Ashiyan. Ha-roitze she-yavri, a person who wants to become healthy. Chotech kezayis boser mibeis shchitasu shel behema, cuts out an olive quantity of meat from the neck area of an animal. Umolcho yofa yofa, salts it thoroughly. Umadicho yofa yofa, umamtin lo ad shetetze nafsha, and before actually eating of it, waits till the life breath departs. Echod oifi kechavim ve'echod Yisrael mutorin bo. This statement of Ravidi is essentially the same as that which was found in the source, and hence we say that this source can serve as a basis for Ravidi's teaching. Rashi points out that as far as the actual eating of the meat and our insistence on waiting for Yitzias HaNefesh, that for the departure of the lifeblood in order to eat of it, that's based on another pasuk that says Lo Yisoichlu Al Hadam, which is taken to mean don't eat of meat while there is still life breath in the animal. However, we're trying to emphasize a very important distinction. That's as far as the actual eating is concerned. But the meat is permissible even though it was removed from the animal while it was still twitching. So that we see that this piece of meat is not classified as aver min achai. Otherwise, aver min achai, limb removed from live animal, otherwise it would be prohibited. The Mishnah. Hashochi beimo chayav oif v'lo yotza mehem dam. This is a rather unusual situation, but it could happen. A slaughtering of these creatures took place, and no blood emerged. Ksherim, the fact that no blood emerges does not affect the kashrus status, the allowance of it. It is kosher. V'necholim b'yadim mesu'avos, and one can eat of this meat even though his hands are mesu'avos tomei. The reason is because the meat did not become susceptible for tumah absorption. That's called hechsher. What ordinarily would machshir the meat? Well, in general, different liquids, seven different types of liquids, are capable of being machshir, making a food item susceptible to tumah absorption. One of them happens to be blood. In this case, since there was no blood, the meat is not susceptible to tuma absorption. It's not mukhshir lekabel tuma, and therefore, one whose hands are tame is able to partake of this meat. Rabbi Shimon Omer, hukhshiru b'shchita. Rabbi Shimon has a different approach, and he says there is another factor, another koyach, that another force that is capable of creating susceptibility for Kabbalah's Tumah, and that's the actual Shechit itself. And Rashi explains the reason, or the logic behind this is that since Shechit is capable of removing the Isser of Eiver Min Achai, it therefore is capable of establishing its food status. In general, when we talk about items getting rinsed off with water, for example, we tend to think that completes its food status, makes it a food ready to eat. So the fact that the Shechita removes the barrier of Avram and Achai from the meat, the Shechita also elevates the meat to a food status, and hence it becomes susceptible to tumah absorption. It's mukshul v'kabel tumah through the act of shechita that was done to it. Before going on in the Gemara, let us glance to the topic heading we've assigned to this Gemara, the Nosei. The topic is Kushya. The Gemara will raise a question as follows. Medaikim meha Mishnah, we infer from the Mishnah, de'im yotza dam shchita, that if blood of the slaughtering would have emerged, oz habosur mukshur lekabel tumah v'yeh osur lo ochlo b'yodayim tameos, and then the meat would be forbidden to eat with one touching it with his tomei hands, as if the tomei hands present a halachic problem with regard to this meat that would have become mukshul lekabel tumah ve'amai. But why? Hare yodayim shniim. Yodayim, hands, have what is called a second level, second degree tumah. The numbers with regard to tumah, as the number gets larger, so to speak, the level decreases. We can say it's the opposite of the way we, let's say, categorize burns: a first degree burn, a second degree burn, and a third degree. A third degree is considered the most severe. The opposite is the case in tumah classification. The first level tumah is a higher form, a more intense form of tumah than a sheni, and a sheni is more intense than a shlishi. Now, a hand that has not been washed through netilas yodayim, a hand, stam yodayim, are shnios l'tumah. They're called second degree tumah. Second degree tumah does not affect chulin. It does have an effect on truma and on kodshim, on sacrifices, but we are talking right now ostensibly about chulin. So why does the Mishnah create the sense that only because there was no blood so one can partake of the meat? If there had been blood and the meat became mukshul lekabel tumah, one would not be able to partake of it with yodayim misuavas, with tomei hands. But why? Hands have a second level of tumah. V'ein sheni oisa shlishi b'chulin. That's the end of our note. A second level tumah does not create a third level of tumah when dealing with chulin. The Gemara now, as we turn to it, is accompanied by a long question marking. Most of it, though, we will discover is in brackets. Do you see, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, a kuf that's encircled with a vertical descending dashed line? All of these lines are, we can say, part of the question, or more accurately, at the end of the long question marking, we start what the Gemara presents as a series of answers, different opinions of how to resolve this issue. You will notice toward the bottom of the page a diamond with a 1 in the little space to the right-hand side of the Gemara. This is the first of 4 answers to this particular question, and they last till Daf Lamed Dalet Omed Aleph. Now the Gemara. Taimo de lo yotso mehen dam. The allowance of the Mishnah that it's mutter to eat with the yodayim misuavos, with the tummy hands, is because no dam emerged during the slaughtering. Ha yotso mehen dam. However, had dam been part of the shechita, then one would not allow to eat of the meat with his tomei hands. To that we ask, Amai, why should that be? Yodayim shnios hein, hands that are not washed, that one did not do netilas yodayim to them, stam yodayim, are second level tumah, v'ein sheni oisa shlishi b'chulin. And the hands which are a second level tumah does not create a third level in the realm of chulin. Chulin is impervious to the effects of a second level tumah, which are these hands that have not been washed. At this point, we could skip the bracketed section and read at the bottom, Omer of Nachman Aravua, Hoche b'chulin shelokon b'kesef maisraskin unadulok Rebbe Meir. We will eventually get to the details of that, but this is an answer that the Mishnah is talking about a special type of chulin situation, that enochinami, we can accept the the premise of the question, and that is that there really is no problem with regard to second with a stam yodayim tomei hands and the consumption of chulin that was mufshil lekabel tuma. The hands would not affect the chulin. However, we will eventually see that we're talking about a special chulin situation that is sensitive to sheni l'tuma. But before we get to the answer, we have a long bracketed section. The purpose of these brackets is noted by the starred note on the inside margin. So graim l'shem dilug, the purpose of these brackets is for skipping, kedei liros miyada tshuva l'shela, in order to see immediately the answer to the question. We already did that. We demonstrated how that works. Besocham, within the brackets, yesh arba hoichochois shemishnosenu medaber b'chulin. There will be four proofs that our Mishnah, in fact, is talking about chulin. In order to raise the question, we have to make the assumption that we're talking about chulin, and then we asked, well, sheni l'tuma, the stam yadayim would not affect chulin, even if the chulin was mukhshar l'kabel tuma. So in order to raise this problem, we have to make the assumption that we, in fact, are talking about chulin. The bracketed section begins. Umimai de bechulin askinan. Who says that we're necessarily talking about chulin? For example, if we were talking about korbanos, then this would be a serious problem. Shiodayim v'dershniim, second level tuma, will ruin kotshim, will ruin sacrifices. So how is it so clear to the Gemara that we're talking about chulin? Answer, dekotani, chaya. The Mishnah used amongst its examples, chaya. An undomesticated kosher variety animal that you can see in the Mishnah, the first line of the Mishnah. De'ilu kotshim, if our Mishnah was a sacrifice-oriented Mishnah, chaya b'kotshim yika. Is there such a thing as a sacrifice brought in the form of a chaya? No, there is no such thing. Therefore, it's clear that our Mishnah is speaking on a chulin level. Vesu, another proof. I b'kotshim, if the Mishnah were talking about kotshim, ki lo yotza mehem dam ksheira, if no dam would have emerged, would you have called this kosher, called this acceptable? Hu atzmo l'dam hu tzorach, when you're dealing with sacrifices, the main purpose in the sacrifice is the receipt of the blood, which is used for sprinkling on the mizbeach. And therefore, if you have a sacrifice that you don't have any blood to sprinkle, the sprinkling of the blood in a sacrifice is that which allows it to be eaten. That's different, of course, than the way we deal with chulin. So you wouldn't be able to characterize the meat as kosher if you don't have blood. Because once again, the blood of the sacrifice is that which is matir the meat when it comes to korbanos. Therefore, our Mishnah, which described the bloodless shechita as being is resulting in kosher meat, it cannot be talking about sacrifices. Vesu, a third proof. I bekotshim, ki yotzu mehem dam mi machshir. We inferred from our Mishnah that there was no hechshir because there was no dam. However, had there been dam, it would have been susceptible to kabbalah tumah, it would have been mukhshir. It's basically saying that dam is machshir. However, if you were dealing with sacrifices, the blood of sacrifices is not machshir lekabbalah tumah. V'yomar Rav Chiya bar Abba Rabbi Yochanan, minayin ledam kodshim she'eino machshir. From where do we know that the blood of sacrifices does not function as a machshir lekabel tuma? Shinemar, the posuk says, al ha'oretz tishpachenu kemayim. And in this blood, this posuk is talking about blood. Blood is considered like water. Dam shenishbach kemayim machshir. Dam that is poured out, like one would pour out water. Water, of course, is one of the other liquids, the most famous liquid, we'll say, that's machshir lekabel tuma. So that kind of blood that one does not need, that one just allows to spill out, like one would spill out water, that kind of blood is machshir. However, she'eino nishbach kamayim, blood that we wouldn't parallel to water, because it's not just poured out and thrown out like you would just some water, but rather it's saved, like is the case with sacrificial blood. Dam kochim is gathered in order to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach. So it's not Nishbach Kamayim. Well, since it's not Nishbach Kamayim, it's not poured out like water, Eino Machshir. It's not parallel to water either, and therefore it's not Machshir Lekabel Tumah. So that make the inference from our Mishnah leads us to a conclusion that we are not talking about Kodesh Meat. Once again, that inference is that had there been blood, it would have been Mukshir. But if it were Kodshim blood does not machshir. Vesu, a fourth proof that our Mishnah is not talking about Korbanos, e bekodshim, if it were talking about Korbanos, ki lo yotza mehem dam, lo miskashri? In the absence of blood, is it in fact not mukshar? Let us say that in other words. In the case of Kodshim, even without blood, the meat is mukshar lekabel tumah, liskashri b'chibas hakodesh. By the virtue of the fact that you're dealing with something that has been sanctified and elevated in importance, it gains a status or a description known as chibas hakodesh, literally the belovedness of the beloved holiness. That phenomenon of something being sanctified and as a result of that elevated insignificance, that itself creates hechsher lekabel tumah. The kaimalon we hold chibas hakodesh machshartan. The fact that something has this holy status to it, that itself serves in lieu of other types of hechsher. And as a result of that, even without the blood, you would not be able to eat it with tomei hands, because it would be mukshor lekabel tumah, and a sheni by kodshim would certainly ruin it. And therefore, our Mishnah, which makes a distinction between no blood and yes blood, is not appropriate with regard to kodshim. As we said, with regard to kodshim, even without the blood, it would be mukshor lekabel tumah. The question that our general sugya is dealing with right now is, why is there any problem with eating the meat had there been blood? The hands we're talking about are a sheni l'tumah. A sheni l'tumah does not ruin chulin. Answer, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rabba Bar Avua, Hocho b'chulin shalokon b'kesef ma'iser askinon u'deloka Rabbi Meir. We should point out, as we did earlier, the diamonds represent a series of answers. So if you skim ahead, even before we explain this answer, you'll notice a Rav Papa and a diamond on Omid Beis, a number 2 accompanies that. On the lower part, you'll see Rav Oshaya in a diamond as well, representing answer number 3. And when you get to Lamed Dalet, Omid Aleph, there will be another name in a diamond. And we will see there, Ula presents a fourth approach. Rabba Bar Avua just told us that this Mishnah is talking about chulin that was purchased with Kesef Meiser. Kesef Meiser is a reference to Meiser Sheni money. A person is expected to tithe 10% of his fruits during the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the Jewish agricultural cycle, the 7-year Shemitah cycle, and bring the fruits or the money value of those fruits to Yerushalayim, and there, in Yerushalayim, buy with the money, if he doesn't bring the actual fruits, buys with the Kesef Meiser Sheni, he buys food. And included in the food, can buy meat to eat. What are we talking about here? He bought chulin that he purchased with Meiser Sheni money. And we are being informed here that sheni is oisa shlishi with regard to that kind of chulin purchased with Meiser Sheni money. And this statement is not in accordance with Rebbe Meir. And the Gemara will now present a Tanaic source containing a couple of opinions on this matter. Disnan, kol hatoun biyasmai medivrei sofrim, anything that requires immersion in water for purification purposes. One example of that is hands. Hands, midivrei sofer means a rabbinic requirement. Anything that needs entrance to water, that's a literal translation, but we'll say an immersion or a purification through water, as the most common example of that may be a mikveh. And we also talk about doing netilas yadayim, pouring water over hands to metahir them. So anything that requires bias mayim from a rabbinic level, mitama es hakodesh, things like that, if they are not purified, if they're not purified, if you didn't do, let us say, the netilas yadayim, so they would, the hands that are not washed, would metames hakodesh, would impose tuma into sacrificial meat, uposel es hatruma, would ruin truma, umuter b'chulin uvamaiser divar b'meir. As far as chulin and meiser is concerned, meiser sheni, Rabbi Meir says these kind of things included in which are the hands would not have any effect. However, we want to emphasize in explaining our Mishnah, v'chachomim oisrin b'meiser. The chachomim say that things that require bias mayim divrei sofrim would ruin meiser. And the example, once again, is the unwashed hands. Rabbi Meir, as you can see, wasn't concerned about the Meister, and that's why we said that our Mishnah is to be explained with regard to the Chulin purchase with Meister Sheni funds, but not according to Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir would have been lenient. The Gemara now raises a question. You'll see it's a long question, and as a result of this question, the Gemara has to seek out a second answer for our Mishnah. Maskif lo Rav Simi bar Ashi. Mimai, who is to say that our Mishnah is like the Rabbonan? Dilma ad kan lo pligi Rabbonan olei de Rabbi Meir. It could be that till now there is a machlokis Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim who are stringent, elo b'achilas Meiser, only with regard to the actual eating of Meiser. Avol v'negia de meiser v'achila de chulin lo pligi. But as far as touching meiser, the issue of touching is in fact the topic of our Mishnah, as the Gemara will prove shortly. We are in our Mishnah dealing with the problem, if you will, of touching meat that would have been mukhshir l'kabel tumah. Of course, we said in our Mishnah there was no blood, but had there been blood, there would have been a problem. And what problem? A problem involving touching. But when you look at these two opinions, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, even the Chachamim who are stringent, who says that their stringency extends to the mere act of touching? It could be that their whole restriction is only eating while in a state of tumah. But touching would be no problem. V'ha negiyahi. And our Mishnah, in fact, is dealing with touching. And how do we know that? Midiktoni, the Mishnah says, ne'echolin biyodayim misu'avois. That the expression ne'echolin is as follows. Mi lo askinan, are we not, in fact, talking about the kosofi le'chavrei? That someone is feeding someone else. Someone is taking the meat and putting it into someone's throat. That's sofi, is to feed someone else. So that the issue of our Mishnah involves someone touching the meat and then giving it to someone to eat. And our Mishnah reflects some type of stringency with regard to merely touching the meat, had the meat been mukhshir l'kabel tumah. But to associate our Mishnah with, let us say, the Chachomim that we saw above, that we cannot do. So we don't have a basis at this point. We don't have an author or a source for our Mishnah's implied stringency. Elom Rav Papa, hocha biyodayim tchilois askinan. Our Mishnah is talking about a very unusual case. A case of hands that gain a Rishon Latuma status. How that can be, we will mention momentarily. But for this, at this second, we want to simply state the case. Hands that are a Rishon Latuma. Now, a first level Tuma, can in fact ruin Chulin, can metame Chulin. And therefore, if there had been blood, the blood would have been machshir the meat lekabel tuma, and one who had tomei hands should be aware that he, like I'll say, he shouldn't eat, he shouldn't handle the meat, because as hands being a rishon the tuma, that would ruin chulin. Chulin is affected by rishon status. Rishon being the more intense level than a sheni. As far as how hands can become a rishon l'tumah, that the Gemara will ask a few lines from here, where it asks umiiko yodayim tfilos. Could there be such a thing? But before we get to that, we will follow along with the Gemara, accepting this construction that our Mishnah is dealing with hands that have a tchila. Tchila means a rishon level status. And in accordance with Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, in accordance with his approach, Desanya, we have a Tanaic source. The first reading of this Tanaic source poses a difficulty, and the Gemara will upgrade the understanding of it right afterwards. And this is all visible through the markings. You can see the frames around these upcoming sections. So the first frame is the original Braisa that says, "Desan ein yodayim tchilos l'chulin." If hands could become a rishon, that rishon status will not apply with regard to contact with chulin. In other words, we're acknowledging that hands could become a rishon l'tumah, but it won't have that status vis-a-vis contact with chulin. We can say we will apply to the hands a double standard. That regard, with regard to, let us say, kochim, they will have a rishon status, but with regard to chulin, they do not have a rishon status. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Mishum Rabbi Meir, Yodayim Tchilos L'chulin Ushnios L'truma. This phrase is difficult to understand, but for the immediate pshat, he is telling us that Yodayim have a Rishon L'tuma status with regard to chulin. The statement itself, though, poses a difficulty, because it seems to treat chulin with greater stringency than it does truma, which cannot be. So the Gemara asks with a tone of wonderment, Tchilos l'chulin in l'truma lo? Could you say that with regard to chulin it has a rishon status and not with regard to truma? No. Hachi ka'amar. Thusly, the source is teaching. Tchilos af l'chulin. That means that given a circumstance that hands could become a rishon, we haven't explained how that happens yet, but given such a circumstance that hands could become a first level tuma, rishon the tuma, that would apply not only to truma, but would apply to chulin as well. That's af, even to chulin. However, hands that are shnios, hands that are second level tuma, which basically is your standard case of hands that are not washed, shnios l'truma in l'chulin lo. However, when a hand has a status of a second level tuma, that will affect truma alone and not chulin. Now the Gemara asks what we were waiting for all along, is where in the world does this idea of a rishon l'tuma hands come in? Could that be that hands, and when we talk about hands, maybe we should have mentioned this earlier, hands means literally one's hands and not the rest of his body. These are dinim derabbanan, these are rabbinic laws, because on a Torah level you couldn't have a situation where just part of a person is tomei and not the whole person. But on a rabbinic level, we speak about hands alone being tomei. In general, and what's very common, is the idea that hands have a second level status, shnius l'tuma. That's why the Gemara is asking here with a certain sense of wonderment, is there such a thing as a rishon, as tchilos? Tchilos means rishon l'tuma, hands. The Gemara says, there is such a thing. Desanya, we have the following source, hichnis yodov l'beis ha-menuga. If a person is standing next to a house that was ruled to be a house with Negoyim. Negoyim is Tzoras. We are familiar with Tzoras with regard to people becoming mitzoroyim, and the Torah talks about even a house becoming menuga. If a person would put his hands into a house that's menuga, yodov tchilos, divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says the hands would then gain a first level tumah status. The chachamim omrim, yodayim shnios. The hands have a second level status, which is a standard level of tumah associated with hands. In order to develop this idea, the Gemara states certain basic premise, the kule alma, everyone here is in agreement, or Bikiva and the Chachamim are in agreement, bia b'miksas lo shmo, bia, partial entrance to the house, namely one inserting his hands to the interior of the house, and not the rest of himself, not going in altogether. That's called bio b'miksas, is not called entrance. And as a result of that, that explains why the person is not tome, even though he's put his hand into the house. So bio b'miksas, partial entrance, is not doesn't constitute a real entrance. Here, in this source, where we have a controversy between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, it concerns the rabbinic imposition of tumah on the hands in anticipation of someone going in completely. How much of a tumah level do we apply to the hands in anticipation of this particular gzeira? Mor Sovar, Rabbi Kiva holds Yodov Kegufo Shavinu Rabbonan. The Rabbonan rule the hands to be like himself had he entered. Now, had a person entered completely a Bayis HaMenuga, he would become a Rishon level Tuma, a Rishon the Tuma. So that when the Rabbonan are imposing this rabbinic stringency with regard to the hands, they treat the hands like the rule would be with regard to a person actually entering, and hence they become a rishon l'tumah. Umor sover the chachamim hold yodayim ki yodayim the almos of rabbanon. When ruling that the hands are tameh, we're going to treat these hands as standard hands. Standard hands that are unwashed have a sheni l'tumah status. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice a couple of triangles, and these are explained in the outside margin under our mivneh heading. Nisyonos lahamid mishnosenu k'Rabbi Akiva. Up till now, we established our Mishnah according to Rav Papa's approach, like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Why not set up the Mishnah like Rabbi Akiva? And the reason for that, reason even for suggesting this is that we have a Stam Mishnah, an unnamed Mishnah, and unnamed Mishnayos are ultimately traced back to Rabbi Akiva for the most part. Even though we say Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, but it's Rabbi Meir Aliba the Rabbi Akiva, as Rashi points out on the third Y line under the Gemara. Hence, we are asking, could we not set up our Mishnah, which spoke about hands as being problematic, even though hands with regard to Chulin in general are not problematic? Velukmo k'Rabbi Akiva, why not set up our Mishnah like Rabbi Akiva, as opposed to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar? The Omar, Rabbi Akiva, who had said Yodov Tchilos Havyon. We can speak about hands that are a Rishon Lutuma. And as a Rishon Lutuma, that would ruin Chulin. So that had the meat become Mukhshar Lekabel Tuma, Enochinami, they would have been problematic, they would have ruined the Chulin, as was implied by the Mishnah. So why don't we set up our Mishnah, like Rabbi Akiva, and speak about these hands that are a Rishon Lutuma? So the Gemara responds, Dilmo ki koma Rabbi Akiva hani mili betruma v'kotchim. It could be that Rabbi Akiva was willing to classify hands as a first level tumah. That's only with regard to their contact with truma and kotchim that are the chamiri, that are stringent. Aval l'chulin shnios havyon. But with regard to chulin, even Rabbi Akiva may have viewed the hands as only a sheni level tumah. As we said before, this is the concept of applying a double standard to the very same hands. Those hands with regard to truma and kochim would have a first level tumah status, but with regard to chulin, they would have a second level status and hence would not affect chulin. Chulin are not affected by sheni l'tuma. And as we proved earlier, our Mishnah was talking about chulin. Question. Velev yonami shnios. Let the hands be in fact sheni and still set up the Mishnah like Rabbi Akiva. This is a second triangle in our Mivneh introduction and in our structural note we pointed out we're trying attempts to set up the Mishnah like Rabbi Akiva. At this point we're saying let the hands in fact be classified as sheni l'tuma with regard to chulin. But when it comes to Rabbi Akiva, he happens to have a very strict opinion with regard to tuma levels. That second level can make chulin, ruin chulin, at a third level. In other words, sheni, when it comes into contact with the chulin, it would impose a third level tuma to chulin. This is a special shita, the unique shita of Rabbi Akiva. So that even if you say that the hands with regard to chulin, Rabbi Akiva classifies as a sheni, but even so, those would ruin chulin according to him. Disnan, and this is featured in the following Tanaic source, Boi Bayoim Dorash Rabbi Akiva, on that very day, the day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed to office of Nosi at the time that Rabbi Gamliel was impeached. There's a whole story that accompanies this particular reference, the Bo Bayom. Rashi points it out and quotes the Gemara in Brochus that tells the whole story. But on that day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah ascended to the Nasius, to the presidency, Dorash Rabbi Kiva stated the following teaching. Quoting a pasuk, V'chol kli cheres v'chulei, and it says yitma. The topic of this pasuk was a dead sheretz dangling in the airspace of a tanor. And your standard tanor, an oven, is said to be, it's understood to have bread in it. Most of the time, an oven has bread in it, has loaves in it. And it says in the pasuk that any kli cheres that happens to have a sheretz in it, chol asher besocho yitma, anything in there, it says yitma. Tomei lo nemar, it doesn't use the word tomei, that anything in the oven becomes tomei. Elo yitma, the grammatical detail here is that yitma is different than tomei. Tomei is it itself becomes tomei, and that's it. Yitma implies that the item which became tomei can pass on the tuma to something else. Yitma equals letamei achirim. Now, when we look at this tanur with the sheretz in its airspace, the sheretz is an av hatuma. Through the airspace, the tanur becomes a rishon letuma. The tanur then transfers tuma or communicates tuma to the items in there, namely the loaves that are in this tanur, the tanur which had become tomei through the sheretz. So as we said, the tanur became a rishon. The breads in there became a sheni, and it says in the pasuk that everything in there yitma. Yitma indicates it has the power to communicate tuma another level. Limeid, this teaches us, al kikar sheni shu'oisa shlishi b'chulin, the loaves that were in this tanur, they became sheni, and they are yitma. That means they, when coming into contact with other chulin, make that into shlishi. That's what the Brisa says here. We made al kikar sheni shu oisa shlishi b'chulin. This is a Tanaic source. It's actually a Mishnah. So at this point, we are asking, why not set up our Mishnah as authored by Rabbi Akiva? And our Mishnah, which talks about sheni hands that are tomei, which is understood to be sheni l'tuma hands, had the meat been mukhshir l'kabel tuma, the hands, in fact, would have ruined the meat. Because Sheni, according to Rabbi Akiva, makes Shlishi Bechulin. Then, the question is, why did Rav Papa say that our Mishnah is according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar? So the Gemara answers, Dilmahani mili betuma d'oraisa. It could be that Rabbi Akiva acknowledges Sheni oisa shlishi in Chulin when you're dealing with tuma that's of a Torah origin. For example, the sheretz, the dead critter that was in the airspace of the earthenware tanur. The earthenware tanur becomes tomei min ha-Torah. That's what the pasuk says. That which is in the tanur becomes tomei as well as per the pasuk. That's all in the Torah. Avo b'derabonon lo omar. But with regard to tuma derabonon, like hands, as we mentioned already a few times, is a rabbinic level tuma. Rabbi Akiva did not necessarily say his din that Sheni is oisa shlishi. Therefore, Rav Papa says we have to establish our Mishnah like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new approach, a third diamond coming up. Rabbi Elazar Amar Rabbi Shaya, Hocha, in our Mishnah, Bechulin Shinasu Al Taras HaKadosh Askinon Udolo Rabbi Yeshua. In general, Chulin does not become affected by Sheni Latuma. However, we're talking about special Chulin. We're talking about someone who treats his Chulin, his mundane food, his common food, as if they were of sacrificial quality. In other words, there are people that want to be very careful that on those occasions that they have real sacrifices, they don't want to mess it up by having it come into contact with any form of tuma. That's because korbanos are very sensitive to tuma, and there's a great amount of stringency associated with eating kochim while there is tuma. In order to get into the habit of exercising, let's say, stringency and creating a distance between himself and tuma, he gets into the habit that all food he eats, he treats as if it were kochim. This is called chulin al taras hakodesh. Chulin shinasu al taras hakodesh. And as a result of that, just like kochim, just like korbanos are affected by a sheni l'tuma, so too this person's chulin would be ruined as well. Now, this idea that chulin can gain a sacrificial status, a kochim status, this is not in accordance with Rabbi Yeshua. According to Rabbi Yeshua, as far as this answer is concerned, Rav Hoshaya is concerned, Rabbi Yeshua does not entertain that possibility that there is chulin that can be treated and be bound to the kochim standard. Disnan, we have the following Tanaic source in which we see two Tanaic authorities that touch on these topics. The reason we're bringing this source in is to show that Rabbi Yeshua is not the one that our Hesber of Rabbi Shaya would conform to. Disnan, Rabbi Lezer Omer, Ho'ochel Oichel Rishon, the first word Ho'ochel is a person. Ochel Rishon is a reference to food that's a Rishon status. So if a person eats food that is Tomei to a Rishon the Tuma level of Tuma, Rishon, the person becomes a Rishon the Tuma. These are, we must point out, rabbinic laws, because in general, food is not capable of being Metama a person. That's Midoraisa. But Midorabonan, it could happen. So one who eats oichel rishon, he himself becomes a rishon. Sheni, if you eat sheni food, then you become a sheni level of tuma. Shlishi equals shlishi. If you eat shlishi level of tuma food, then you become a shlishi. In order to remember Rabbi Lezer's shita, you can remember the common saying, you are what you eat. If you eat a rishon, you become a rishon. And naturally, as a rishon, you then would the things that you touch the food that you touch would become a sheni status. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, ha'oichel ochel rishon v'sheni, a person who eats food that's rishon status or sheni status, the person himself becomes a sheni. Shlishi, if a person eats shlishi level tumah food, then, and now you'll see a certain double standard now apply, if a person ate shlishi level food, then sheni lekodesh, that means the person is classified as a sheni with regard to his contact with korbonus. That would mean, practically speaking, if a person ate shlishi level food, he shoots up a level, which is a very unusual thing in the realm of tumas and taras. You don't find, you ever usually find things going down a level as subsequent items touch previous things. This is an exception. If one ate shlishi food, then he, as a person, becomes a sheni level tuma, but only with regard to his contact with korbanos, the ein sheni letruma. And he does not become a sheni with regard to truma, even though truma is also somewhat sensitive, but not as sensitive as korbanos. And hence, if he ate shlishi level food, he doesn't become a sheni with regard to truma. He'll become a shlishi with regard to truma, which would mean that he, if he touches truma, he won't ruin it. Rashi points out, though, he is nevertheless forbidden to eat the truma, because the shlishi, even though he doesn't affect things upon touch, he himself has an eating restriction. Now, all of this, Rabbi Yeshua says, is bechulin shinasu al taras truma. He is eating chulin that's treated with a truma level of stringency. Truma is more stringent than chulin, more susceptible to tumah. He decided to treat all of his chulin like truma. And it's under those circumstances that if he eats chulin, shenas ataras truma, that had become a rishon or become a sheni, then the above laws would apply. However, we infer altaras truma in altaras hakodesh loy. The concept of chulin having a higher level standard than standard chulin, that applies only to those who decide to treat their chulin as if it were truma. But such a thing would not exist. It would be, let's say, I'll say a joke or a figment of his imagination if he were to claim that his food is viewed as if they were sacrifices. He, Rabbi Yeshua, is of the opinion that chulin treated as if they were korbanos doesn't have a shlishi status. In other words, if a person, let us say, decided he wants to treat his chulin as if it were korbanos, as far as Rabbi Yeshua is concerned, if a sheni would touch that chulin, it would not be affected. Therefore, the answer of Rabbi Shaya that says that our mission is talking about chulin shenasu al taras hakodesh is a reasonable answer, but not if you were to associate our mission with Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Lezer, on the other hand, Rashi points out later, Rabbi Lezer spoke about oichel rishon, oichel sheni, oichel shlishi, without qualifying what kind of ochel, and therefore it can be assumed that, as far as Rabbi Lezer is concerned, even chulin shenasu ataras hakodesh also is capable of being treated with this stringency. The Gemara, as it goes on, raises a question and says, look, you just tried to avoid setting up our Mishnah like Rabbi Yeshua, but still, v'lukma b'chulin shenasu ataras truma v'Rabbi Yeshua. Why not say that our Mishnah, which talks about the meat being eaten with tomei hands, is in fact talking about chulin that was treated with a truma standard? So the Gemara answers at the top of Lamed Dalet, on the second line, Lo Sakadaitoch. You can't set up, you can't think that our Mishnah is talking about Chulin Shenasra al Taras Truma. Tikotoni Bosar. Our Mishnah is talking about the meat. Di'i Betruma, if one were to think that our Mishnah was chulin shenas or ataras truma, that means you're treating your chulin as if it were truma. But truma does not include meat. Basar mi'ika. There is there basar in the realm of truma? No, there isn't. Truma is a tithe from things that grow, fruits and vegetables, but not meat. Elamai bekachim. So you want to say that our Mishnah is talking about chulin shenas or ataras hakodesh? How can you say that our Mishnah is talking about that? Chaya bekachim miiko. Our Mishnah mentions the slaughtering of behema chaya ve'oif. It mentions chaya also. Are there chayos? Are there chayos or kosher variety undomesticated animals? But there are no sacrifices brought from chayos. So to say that in our mission we have someone treating his chulin as if it were kachim, why would he treat his chaya meat as if it's kachim when chayos don't exist at all in the realm of kachim? We're talking along the way about people that want to get into the habit with regard to their chulin when the eventuality of the real thing comes around, so that he is already in the habit of exercising restriction. But why would he want to exercise restriction with regard to chaya meat because in anticipation of some type of contact with actual sacrificial chaya meat when such a thing doesn't exist? The Gemara says such a thing may not actually exist. However, basar bebasar michlaf, it's very easy to confuse chaya meat with behema meat. And therefore, a person would want to get into the habit of treating his chaya meat as if it were sacrificial in anticipation of his running into behema, actual behema sacrificial meat, as they are easily confused. However, basar bepeiri lo michlaf. But to suggest that he's treating his basar, the meat, as if it were truma, in anticipation of his coming into contact with fruits, so he wants to get into the habit of eating his meat as if it were truma, so that he doesn't mess up when he eats his fruits. Well, people don't confuse meat with fruits. So that even if he were, let us say, exercising leniency with regard to the meat, that would not lead a person, let us say, to confuse leniency with meat with leniency with regard to fruits. Therefore, to set up our Mishnah as chulin shenas al taras truma and say it's according to Rabbi Yeshua, since our Mishnah is talking about meat, it's clearly not talking about anything associated with truma. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.